I'm very happy to welcome to our program again, as we've talked with Nancy Altman quite recently before the election. But Nancy is the co-director of the group Social Security Works, and she's a longtime activist and policymaker on Social Security issues, both inside and outside government. And she's the author of the book, The Battle for Social Security, From FDR's Vision to Bush's Gamble, which was a book to discuss the effort at the time under the George W. Bush administration to privatize Social Security. Nancy, it's a pleasure to have you back, not under the particular circumstances we're living through now, but I'm so happy you could be here to talk us through.
Yes, well said. Thank you so much for having me.
So, Nancy, I've been asking our guests of late, over the last few weeks since the election, to tell us about their experience watching the election returns come in on November 8th and the kind of thoughts that were going through your mind as it became apparent that Donald Trump would be our next president.
Well, I reacted on many levels. Obviously, beyond policy, I was just really disgusted at the thought of having someone who's ran such a sexist, xenophobic, racist campaign, and then to have Steve Bannon in the White House and so forth. But narrowing in on policy, this is bad news for Social Security, bad news for Medicare, and I don't mean this hyperbolically. I've been following the issue for decades. Medicare is in its has recently celebrated its 50th anniversary, Social Security its 80th anniversary, and I think this may be certainly the biggest threat to Medicare and perhaps the biggest threat to Social Security that we've ever witnessed, what the Republicans have in store if they have their way.
Right. Well, say a word before we get into the current threat and the policies as advocated by many Republicans for years and years. Tell us about the work that you do at Social Security Works.
Absolutely. Social Security, and we have to be careful when you say it's what the Republicans have in store. It's the Republican leadership. It's the establishment, which now includes Donald Trump. The Republican voters are like Democratic voters and independent voters on these issues. They overwhelmingly support Social Security and Medicare. Our group, the name of the organization kind of says it, Social Security Works. There's been a 30-year, literally billionaire-funded campaign to undermine confidence in Social Security, to convince young people that the program won't be there, to convince everyone that we can't afford it, which is just all not true. So we are trying to bring facts to the conversation to educate the American people and our leaders more than the American people and protect and indeed expand these programs, which is really what is called for. We're facing a retirement income crisis. Medicare was supposed to be the first step in Medicare for all. So our organization is both protecting and fighting to expand these vital programs.
Nancy Altman, as many of our listeners are aware, Donald Trump pledged not to touch Medicare and Social Security during his campaign. There's a lot of recordings of his talking points on this, but like so many of Donald Trump's talking points, he says different things on different days. But since his election, and since he's been moving on in making appointments and nominating folks for positions in his administration and the transition team, we have heard that Donald Trump is nominating Tom Price, Republican of Georgia, to be his administration's Health and Human Services Secretary, which oversees Medicare. And maybe you could tell us, in combination between House Speaker Paul Ryan, who has long advocated the privatization of Medicare, and the credentials that Tom Price brings to his position, presuming his nomination goes forward, what is it that's on the agenda of these Republicans in leadership positions?
Yes, and we should add to that Vice President Mike Pence as well. And just again, to give a little bit of background, you are correct that Donald Trump, during the campaign, said that he would not cut these programs. But before the campaign, before he began to run for office, he talked very much about raising the retirement age of Social Security to 70, privatizing would be good for everyone, called it a Ponzi scheme. And indeed, on Sean Hannity in 2011 said, Republicans should not run on cutting these programs because they'll lose elections. So there was always some concern, and you're exactly right. The people he has surrounded himself with have hated these programs, hate these programs, and although they will tell you they love them and they want to save them, and that's the first tip, because these programs do not need saving. But they have been talking about ending both Social Security and Medicare as we know it. What Speaker Paul Ryan has done, just as soon as the election was over, started talking about repealing Obamacare, which is they ran on, but then added to that, and Medicare, we have, because once we deal with Obamacare, we have to deal with Medicare because Obamacare wrecked Medicare, and we've got to save it, and that's just a lie on both counts. That number one, the Affordable Care Act had very little to do with Medicare, but to the extent there were some Medicare provisions, first of all, they're completely separable. But second, they actually strengthened Medicare's financing. And the truth is that these programs, saving is a way of, say, is Washington speak for, we know they're very popular, so we can't say what we really mean, and so we're going to talk about saving them. These programs, we can afford. We're the wealthiest nation in the world. We're at the wealthiest moment in our history. It's a question of values. Do we want to expand these programs or cut them? And I think the American people overwhelmingly think, when you look at polls, that we should be expanding these programs. We're facing a retirement income crisis. Social Security is the solution. We are facing rising healthcare costs. We are the only industrialized society where healthcare coverage is not a right. Medicare for all is a way to get to healthcare for all of us.
Nancy, I wonder if you'd sort out some of the rhetoric, some of the euphemisms used by those Republican advocates of privatizing Social Security and Medicare. For instance, with Medicare in particular, you hear Paul Ryan talk about how Medicare is headed for bankruptcy in 10 years. You also hear him talk about not eliminating the program, but actually providing people new avenues and methods to get their health care by going into the marketplace. But when you examine what these proposals would mean for the average U.S. citizen out there, what are we talking about?
Well, and you're exactly right to talk about that. Everyone should have their ears be listening for the euphemisms, because these are extremely successful programs. They are extremely efficient programs, and they are extremely popular programs. So, you know, as you mentioned in my introduction, that I wrote a book called The Battle for Social Security. In every generation, there have been those who hate government, don't think this is Social Security and Medicare are kinds of programs government should provide. They think it should just be, you know, an Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, and nothing else, and no domestic spending. So they are against these kinds of government-sponsored insurance. And they used to, in the 30s, 40s, 50s, they'd call it socialism. They'd say that the government shouldn't be doing this. And they, time after time, lost because the American people disagreed. But it was an honest debate. Now, Paul Ryan and Tom Price, the nominee to be Health and Human Services Secretary, Mike Pence and the others talk about, we want to give people choice. Well, there already is choice within these programs. We want to save them. They're going bankrupt. They are not going bankrupt. Whenever you project out 10, 20, 30, 40 years, Social Security and Medicare are projected out 75 years, 75 years. You're sometimes going to see unintended surpluses. You'll sometimes find unintended shortfalls. And, of course, you have to address those. And it is true that Social Security and Medicare, if you project out far enough, are forecasting manageable shortfalls, nothing to be alarmed about. It's the American people. We should make the wealthiest pay more into these programs, and these programs will be fine. for many generations. There's no reason we can't have these programs forever. But by talking about this alarmist language, it's going bankrupt, it's, we've got to make a radical change, the population's aging, we can't afford all of these old people, what you're doing is softening, they're softening the ground to come in and end these programs as we know them and to substitute, in the case of Medicare, what they're talking about is instead of right now when you turn 65, you get a Medicare card and you have insurance that you can go to hospitals, doctors, and so forth. What they want to do is give you some money and say, they basically want to turn, and say, go out on the market, good luck, find yourself some insurance. We know that before Medicare was enacted, most seniors could not find insurance that they could afford, and those that did paid astronomical amounts for the insurance, and that's why we have Medicare. The irony is that Medicare works extremely well, and what the Paul Ryan and his allies are talking about is ironically turning Medicare into Obamacare. Obamacare is better than what we had before, but it's not nearly as good as Medicare. And what we should be doing is lowering the Medicare age, putting in a universal children's program, moving towards Medicare for all. But of course, they're talking about turning the clock back and turning Medicare into what they hate, Obamacare.
We're speaking with Nancy Altman, co-director of the group Social Security Works, and she's the author of the book, The Battle for Social Security, From FDR's Vision to Bush's Gamble, referring to the privatization effort of Social Security by the George W. Bush administration, an effort that thankfully failed in that 2005 era after he was reelected, or I should say elected for the first time if you're counting votes. So, Nancy, I wanted to ask you, when it comes to the voucherization of Medicare, what would be the tangible results for a person in terms of covering all their medical expenses as they get older, year to year? Are we talking about vouchers that will cover, 25%, 50%, 90%? Can we envision what these vouchers would be like and their limitations?
Well, and that's the real danger. They could change from year to year. They're up to what Congress decides to appropriate, so that you could have, they might try to lure people in by having a decent voucher the first year, but then the next year, your tough luck, and if the subsidy, if premiums go up very fast and you can't afford them, I guess that's your tough luck. And that's the real problem with these. It makes the federal government's balance sheet look better because it limits the cost to the federal government. But what it does is it shifts the cost to individuals. That is exactly the wrong way to go. The whole idea of insurance is that you pool your risk, and there's no better pool than as wide as many people as possible. And Medicare covers virtually everyone over 65, so that's a very, very large pool. And if we lowered the age, it would be an even larger pool. But what they want to do is reduce the pool, so you are on your own. It's a good luck, Grammy, you're on your own kind of proposal.
Nancy, just to clarify, for those of us listening who are not on Medicare, as I understand it, and you can clarify this, Medicare doesn't cover all your expenses for health care. A lot of people go out in the marketplace and they buy these supplemental health insurance programs. Medicare Advantage, I think, is what it's referred to, right?
But there is something called Medigap. And it is true. I mean, one way that Medicare should be expanded is that it should have a catastrophic component. I mean, there are improvements that should be made. And it should cover dental work, and it should cover vision and hearing, and there are proposals that have been introduced in Congress to expand those benefits. Right now, what Medicare is really sort of modeled after the old Blue Cross Blue Shield, where there's hospital insurance, there are parts for doctors, there are drugs. Now, there is some choice within it, so that there's the traditional Medicare, or you can opt into what is you refer to as Medicare Advantage. But on top of that, lot of people buy private insurance, call what's called Medigap, to fill in the gaps that Medicare leaves. And it's, so it's not a perfect system, but what they're talking about is really unraveling it and simply giving people a subsidy and saying, go out and find whatever insurance you can afford. And that is shifting the risk to individuals. So Medicare should be expanded in a number of ways, but it certainly shouldn't be cut back, and it certainly shouldn't be ended and converted into what they call this premium support.
Nancy, there's a couple of other things I wanted to get to, but I wanted to just spend a moment, just a quick moment, on one of the elements of Speaker of the House Ryan's plan is to sever those 55 years and older from those who are younger. And really, the message would be, if you're 55 years and older, we're not going to touch your plan. It's going to stay the way it is. Those who are younger are going to get this, you know, this voucherization and quite substantially less benefits. What is the, how would that mechanism work? Because if you shrink the pool of those 55 and older, those are going to be sicker and require more health care. It seems like the expense is going to rise, and it pits one generation against another, in essence, right?
This is an old trick. This is pulled from an old playbook. Back in the 2005, when President Bush was proposing privatization of Social Security, he said, oh, don't worry, if you're 55 and older, your benefits won't be touched. It actually, and this is an irony, there was an article that came out in 1983 called a Leninist, Achieving Social Security Reform Towards a Leninist Strategy. And it's a blueprint of what President Bush supported and what's been happening. It's undermined confidence of young people, tell them they can do better on the market. It's all these things. But one of the things that said was, tell people 55 and over that they won't be touched, so that they won't have a bone in the, or a dog in the race. And there are a couple problems with that. First of all, it's very insulting to people who are older. Most people 65 and older have children and grandchildren, and they're out there protesting changes to Social Security and Medicare, not just to protect their own benefits, but because they know how important these benefits are for others. So even if it were a promise that could be kept, we're not going to touch anyone over 55 or over, it's an insult to frame it that way, and as you say, it sets up this sort of intergenerational warfare. But beyond that, I think you're exactly right. In the case of Medicare, it's really, and in the case of Social Security too, it's untenable, because people 55 and over becomes what is known in the pension world as a closed group, and that always is more expensive. It's as if, I mean, the wonderful thing about the federal government sponsoring these plans are that, unlike private employers, the federal government doesn't run out of money, it doesn't go out of business, it doesn't have to worry about losing money this year. It's a very powerful entity that's permanent. But what you're basically doing is you'll be running it as if it were going bankrupt. All of a sudden it's closed and you've got an aging population. So the details don't make sense, but the larger picture is that if it's good for everybody, it should be changed. And if it's not good for everybody, don't try to have young people who aren't focused on this, the ones who are left holding the bag. And the irony is that often these changes are sold on the line that it's pushing costs to the young people, it's going to bankrupt young people, which is not true. But the irony is they say that, and then whose benefits are they cutting? Young people's. So which is another way to know that really they just ideologically don't like these programs and want to end them, and they've wanted to from before the day they were enacted.
Well, Nancy, we only have a couple minutes left, but probably the most important question here is, the Republicans now control all three branches of government, something that they haven't done in quite some time. What are the prospects for effective opposition to these plans by Paul Ryan and possibly Donald Trump himself, and certainly the advocacy of privatization by his nominated Health and Human Services Secretary, Tom Price? What can the Democrats, what can progressives do to stop these plans from moving forward and materializing?
Well, it is very scary, as you say, but the one good thing about these programs are that they are overwhelmingly supported across the ideological spectrum, so that the conservative base of the Republican members don't want to see these programs cut. So what we've got to do is make sure everyone knows. Our website is socialsecurityworks.org, and we have up-to-the-minute information about what's going on if people want to go sign up on that. But the important thing is to call your members, call your friends, call your neighbors. If you've got friends and neighbors in red states, let them know that there is a threat to Social Security and Medicare, and they should be contacting their representatives and their senators and reminding them that those people work for us. We don't work for them. And they should not be doing things that we don't want done.
Now, just to be clear, there's still a filibuster in the Senate. A filibuster in the Senate can stop legislation dead in its tracks, unless those advocating those changes have 60 or more votes.
Well,
what is the situation in Congress? What are the mechanisms that could stop this privatization plan?
Well, unfortunately, and the you're right. There is the filibuster, and in fact, Senator Collins, a Republican, moderate Republican from Maine, just I think today came out and said not so fast on Medicare. But the real problem is there is a kind of technical procedure called reconciliation, where Social Security cannot be brought under reconciliation, although unfortunately Tom Price, the nominee to be Health and Human Services, is proposing to change the law so it can be. But Social Security can't, Medicare can. And with reconciliation, there's limited debate, there's no chance to filibuster. So if the Republicans are dead set on doing this, they have the ability to do it. But again, they really are going to be crossing their own constituents as well as everyone else. So it's really important, especially in to talk to the senators, because they're running statewide. But everyone should know that hands off our Social Security, hands off our Medicare.
Thank you so much, Nancy. Give us the website one more time, and we'll look forward to our next conversation, hopefully with some hope there on the horizon about stopping this plan cold, at least from my perspective, and many of our listeners, too, I'm sure.
All of our perspectives. So thank you so much for having me. It's socialsecurityworks.org, all one word, socialsecurityworks.org. And I'm confident this is a fight we can win, but we all have to be engaged.
Well said. Nancy, thanks so much for all your really important work. We'll stay in touch. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
That's Nancy Altman, co-director of the group Social Security Works, and author of the book The Battle for Social Security, and a good resource to find out what's happening with the threats to Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security.